Bicatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a book that's, well, more than just a classic. It feels like a guide to living a meaningful life. Joseph Campbell's The Power of Myth.
It really is foundational. And, you know, if you've ever felt a bit disconnected in our modern world, maybe a bit hyper-secular, you feel like something, I don't know, sacred is missing day to day, then this deep dive is definitely for you.
Absolutely. We live in a time that really prioritizes tech and logic, right? And sometimes that leaves this kind of spiritual vacuum.
Yes, psychological one too. And Campbell saw this coming decades ago.
Right. And his core idea is actually wonderfully simple, isn't it? That myths aren't just like dusty old stories or footnotes.
No, not at all. They're the blueprints. Timeless blueprints for the human soul, you could say. They express these universal human experiences, birth, death, struggle.
And they guide us toward meaning, toward purpose.
Exactly. They're the collective wisdom that, well, modern societies may be sidelined a bit. Campbell argued that to address this feeling of emptiness, we need to reconnect with these really deep foundational patterns, recognize them as essential systems of wisdom.
So who was this person who managed to weave together all these threads from human history? Joseph Campbell, born 1904. He became one of the most influential scholars, really, of the 20th century in comparative religion and mythology.
And his background was serious scholarship. He got his master's in medieval literature from Columbia, then spent decades just immersing himself in research, looking for these core patterns across global traditions. I mean, everything from Native American folklore to Hindu scriptures.
Heavy stuff.
Definitely not light reading, but he had this incredible ability to translate it into something profound yet accessible.
And his biggest contribution, the thing he's most famous for, is probably the monomyth. He laid that out in The Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Right. The idea that whether you're looking at Gilgamesh or the Buddha or even, you know, Luke Skywalker, they're all following this single universal story structure.
It's fascinating because his perspective wasn't just academic, was it? He blended that scholarship with a real spiritual insight.
Very much so. He was heavily influenced by Carl Jung, especially the idea of the collective unconscious. So he saw all those gods, demons, quests as reflections of our own inner psychology.
So it's not just about finding God out there, but understanding the patterns in here.
Precisely. Understanding the psychology within.
And the reason The Power of Myth, the book itself, is so approachable, the basis for our deep dive today is thanks to Bill Moyers, the journalist.
That's right. The book is basically the transcripts from their amazing PBS television series. It's Campbell's lifetime of wisdom, but distilled into these really engaging conversations. It makes complex mythology feel almost like a fireside chat.
Okay, so let's really unpack the book's core message. Campbell seems to intend it as two things at once. An intro to this universal language of myth.
And also a practical guide, a way to find personal meaning by understanding these bigger stories.
And the absolute core argument, the thing that defines his work, is that myths are symbolic. They represent deep psychological and spiritual truths. They are not literal history.
That is the crucial distinction. They're humanity's shared vocabulary for life's big mysteries. Birth, suffering, transformation, death. If you read them literally, they often seem absurd or even contradictory.
But if you read them metaphorically,
they become life-changing. They unlock meaning.
That difference metaphor over literalism is just everything in Campbell. And the book takes you on this incredible journey, right? Across cultures, across time.
But he constantly brings it back. He uses examples like Star Wars alongside, say, the life of the Buddha or Jesus.
To show that these ancient patterns are still completely active. They're present in our lives right now.
We're living the myth in a way.
So if we accept that, how do we see it? How do we identify it in our own experience?
Well, the structure Campbell gives us is the monomyth, or the hero's adventure. It usually breaks down into three main stages. It kicks off with separation.
Okay, separation. That starts with the call to adventure, the nudge or maybe the shove out of your comfort zone.
Exactly. But often, the first reaction is refusal. Think about it if you're facing a big career change, or maybe a relationship needs to end. The first instinct is often, no, I can't.
That's the ego fighting back.
It's the ego resisting the disruption. The call messes with the familiar structure of your life. But this separation stage is vital because the hero forces you to leave the known world. You have to cross the threshold into what Campbell calls the special world.
Where the rules are different and transformation can actually happen.
Right. And that's often the biggest psychological hurdle, just stepping across that line.
And once you're across, you get to the tough part, initiation.
Yeah, this is the meat of the story, the road of trials, allies, enemies, finding the treasure or the boon. But Campbell points out something important about the dragon the hero often has to slay.
It's usually not a literal dragon breathing fire.
Rarely. It's almost always the dragon of the ego. Our attachments, our fears, the false identities we cling to, that's what prevents real growth.
Like the Buddha leaving his palace comforts. That wasn't a physical fight.
It was slaying the dragon of attachment. Or think of Luke Skywalker facing Darth Vader. Vader represents the darkness, the potential shadow, within his own family, within himself. Initiation is fundamentally an inner battle, an inner refinement.
Okay, so separation, initiation, and then the final stage, which maybe matters most for everyone else, the return.
Yes. The hero has to bring the wisdom, the boon they won, back to the ordinary world to help renew the community. But this is often tricky.
Because the profound thing you've learned doesn't always fit neatly back into everyday life.
Exactly. You've changed, but the world might seem the same. Integrating that deeper understanding back into ordinary reality, that's its own challenge. You have to figure out how to live the wisdom you found.
So this whole structure, the monomyth, it's not just a story pattern. It serves real functions for us, right? Campbell outlines four.
That's right. Four key jobs myth performs. The first is metaphysical, connecting us to the awe and mystery of existence itself.
Like looking up at the stars.
Precisely. Then the cosmological, offering some kind of explanation for the universe, how it works, our place in it. Though maybe less relevant now with science explaining so much.
But still, the feeling of it matters.
True. The third is sociological myths help maintain social order, shared values, group cohesion.
And the fourth, maybe the most personal for us today, is the pedagogical function.
Yes. Guiding individual development.
Yeah.
Helping us navigate the stages of life from childhood dependence to adult responsibility and hopefully towards wisdom in old age. Gives us models for how to live.
And this ties back to how we read them. You said it before, but it's worth hammering home. Metaphorically, not literally.
Absolutely crucial. If we treat myths as factual history or science, they lose their spiritual power. And worse, they often become sources of conflict. My literal truth is better than your literal truth.
You mistake the pointer for the moon.
Exactly. It's like arguing about the design of the cup instead of drinking the water inside.
Campbell also talks about where myths might have come from, right? And a big shift in consciousness.
He does. He looks back at early shamanic and hunter-gatherer societies, where there was often this deep reverence for nature, frequently expressed through figures of the great goddess. Myths centered on fertility, cycles, the earth.
Matriarchal, maybe? Or at least balanced?
Often, yes. But then in many cultures, there was a historical shift towards patriarchal sky god religions. These tend to emphasize order, law, transcendence away from the earth, and a more linear view of time and purpose.
And Campbell argued quite powerfully that suppressing that feminine, cyclical, earth-connected principle has led to problems.
He believed it contributed significantly to the spiritual and ecological imbalance we see today. We've become very focused on linear progress, control, abstraction. Maybe losing touch with that nurturing reverence for nature, for the body, for the cyclical realities of life.
Which feels incredibly relevant right now. And this connects to ideas like sacrifice, doesn't it? Not in a primitive sense, but psychologically.
Right. Mythic sacrifice isn't really about appeasing some angry god. It's about the necessary death of the old self, the limited ego, so that something new, something larger, can be born.
Like a seed has to die in the ground to become a plant.
Exactly, that metaphor. It's the death required for rebirth and transformation.
Okay, this brings us to maybe his most famous, but also most misunderstood phrase, follow your bliss.
Ah, yes.
When people hear that today, it often sounds like, I don't know, just do whatever feels good. Quit your job, buy a fancy car. Pure hedonism, is that what he meant?
Not even close. And this is such an important clarification. When Campbell talked about bliss, he meant pursuing that deep, authentic calling. The path that resonates with your truest, innermost self, your unique potential. It's the signal that tells you you're aligned with your deeper purpose.
But it's not easy street.
Absolutely not. He was very clear that following your bliss often requires immense courage and sacrifice. It might mean leaving security behind, facing disapproval, enduring hardship. The bliss is the compass pointing the way, but the path itself can be incredibly demanding. It's about aligning your personal journey with something larger than your immediate comfort. It's almost a spiritual discipline.
That completely changes the feel of it. It's not frivolous, it's serious. It's about finding your authentic role. And this all leads towards his idea of the masks of eternity.
Yes. This is the ultimate context, the idea that all the gods, all the religious figures, all the myth systems from around the world, they are essentially culturally specific masks.
Masks for what?
For the same ultimate transcendent mystery. The reality that's beyond all names and forms. The goal isn't to prove one mask is right, but to recognize the single ineffable mystery behind all the different masks that various cultures have created to try and grasp it.
Wow. Okay, so if we boil this down, what are some key themes we can take away and actually use? Theme one has to be the universal hero's journey.
Definitely. It gives you a framework, a map, for understanding your own growth. It's a process of individuation, of becoming fully yourself.
And the reflection for you, the listener, is think about a struggle you're facing right now, a job loss, a relationship difficulty, a health issue. Could you reframe that? See it not just as a problem, but as your initiation phase.
Exactly. It shifts it from being just a random, painful event to being a meaningful, necessary ordeal that will lead to transformation, to a stronger sense of self. It gives it purpose.
Theme two, we keep coming back to it, the importance of metaphorical interpretation.
Yes. Reading these stories, whether they're ancient myths or even modern news narratives, perhaps reading them like poetry, reveals truths about the human condition that just literal facts can't touch.
And applying that idea just naturally leads to more tolerance, right?
Hmm.
If you see religious stories as metaphors for deep truths, you stop arguing about the literal details and start appreciating the shared wisdom.
You start looking for the common ground, the shared human experience behind the different symbolic languages.
And theme three. Finding the sacred in the secular. Campbell's idea that we can make ordinary life feel sacred again.
Yeah, this is beautiful. Simply by recognizing the mythic patterns playing out in everyday events. The reflection here is, what small, routine part of your day could you view differently? Preparing food for your family, commuting to a job you feel called to, even just the rhythm of seasons, could you see the ritual in it? The timeless pattern.
It's about bringing that sense of depth back into the mundane. Campbell also left us with some incredible, memorable lines, quotes that have really stuck in the culture.
Oh, absolutely. You hear them everywhere, sometimes without even knowing the source. The most famous, probably. Follow your bliss and the universe will open doors where there were only walls.
And now we know it's not about indulgence, but about courage. Aligning your passion with your path and trusting that when you do, opportunities will appear.
Trusting the wisdom of that inner calling over just, you know, purely rational, fear-based decisions.
Then there's the one linking the inner and outer worlds. Myths are public dreams. Dreams are private myths.
Such a neat way to put it. It shows that deep connection between the collective stories of humankind and our own individual psychological patterns. Your personal struggles echo the ancient epics and vice versa.
And a really powerful one about growth. The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek.
Classic initiation wisdom. It's a metaphor saying that confronting our deepest fears, our shadow self, the parts of ourselves we avoid, that's the only way to find genuine growth, self-knowledge, the treasure. You have to turn towards the scary thing.
You can't go around it.
You have to go through it.
And maybe one that sums up the whole point of the journey. The privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are.
Beautiful. The ultimate goal isn't external success, wealth, fame, whatever. It's achieving genuine selfhood. Shedding the false identities, the masks put on you by society or fear, and discovering, embodying who you authentically are.
So how can we apply this as, like, practically, day to day? Let's talk personal development and crisis navigation.
Okay. Take a common modern challenge, a major life transition, like career change or maybe a difficult breakup. It feels chaotic, scary.
Totally paralyzing sometimes. How does the mythic structure help?
Well, first, recognize the event losing the job, the relationship ending, the separation, the call to adventure, even if it feels forced upon you. Then the period of uncertainty, maybe searching for work, grieving the relationship, feeling lost. That's the initiation.
The road of trials.
Exactly. It forces you to confront your fears, financial insecurity, loneliness, loss of identity. The key is to frame it that way. This isn't just a disaster. It's a necessary ordeal.
Right.
It's forging something new in you.
And hopefully the outcome is a new job, a new way of being single, a new perspective that's the boon, the treasure you bring back in the return.
Right. It radically reframes the experience from failure or chaos into a purposeful, transformative phase. It gives it meaning, which makes it bearable, even valuable.
What about applying follow your bliss to vocation and career?
Well, again, remembering it's not about ease, but alignment. It might mean choosing a path that pays less but feels deeply meaningful. That financial sacrifice, that's the trial. The boon isn't just money, it's fulfillment. Feeling like your work contributes something authentic. And Campbell believed that when you're truly aligned, your work naturally serves the greater good.
And briefly, relationship insight.
Viewing love, marriage, or deep partnership as a spiritual path, not just a social contract. When conflicts arise, which they inevitably do, you can see them as initiations, challenges that force both partners to grow beyond their individual egos, to practice compassion, to build something larger together. It's about transcending separateness.
That's a profound way to look at disagreements. So, wrapping up, what really stood out to you from revisiting Campbell for this?
You know, what always strikes me is how strongly he links authenticity with service. That idea that following your bliss, your true path, isn't selfish. It's actually a spiritual discipline that naturally leads you to contribute meaningfully to the world. When you're doing what you are uniquely meant to do, that is your service. They aren't opposed, they're aligned.
Yeah, that really landed for me too. And for me, I think the most valuable takeaway is this. Your life isn't just random. It's not meaningless noise. It has a mythic dimension, an ancient pattern running through it. And just by recognizing those patterns, by seeing your struggles as trials and your breakthroughs as boons, you shift from being a passive victim of circumstance to being the active hero of your own journey. That makes everything feel more purposeful.
Beautifully put.
Campbell showed us the monomyth is alive in Star Wars, in stories we still tell. So here's a final thought for you to ponder. If these universal story patterns help us navigate life's challenges, what modern crisis may be personal for you, maybe global, do you think most needs a new myth, a new guiding story to help us understand it and move through it?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.